Broadcasting live from beautiful, historic Marion, Ohio, it's Now with Scott Spears on WWGH 107.1 FM. Call Scott live on the air anytime at 740-383-9944. No topic is too big or too small. I'm your announcer, the man with the golden voice, Ted Williams. And now, here's your host, Scott Spears.
Thank you, man with the golden voice, Ted Williams, and away we go on this Wednesday, September the 9th, 2020, 15 minutes past the hour, and we have got a great program for you today. I do want to let everybody know that I will be on from 8 to 10 this morning, and then I will continue on this morning with the On the Air program, which I will co-host with Glenn Coble from 10 a.m. until 12 noon, and then Glenn will be on with A Progressive Life from 12:10 until 1 p.m. Then this afternoon, we have Offbeat News and Trivia with Nate Redmond, 4:10 to 5 p.m., and the Trinity Baptist Church Sunday Sermon from 6:10 to 7 p.m. So that's the lineup today, and a lot of great programs sprinkled throughout the day, so don't miss any of it. Now, our first guest this morning, we're so glad to have in studio, because if you've been talking about anything over the last 6 months, you have been talking about the COVID-19 pandemic. Now, we have heard from doctors on this show. We've heard from doctors in Marion. We've heard from the health commissioner. We've heard from doctors in other parts of the country. We have talked to people, but what we really always wanted to do is talk to somebody in the Marion area who has had this illness, who can tell us what it's like, how they contracted it, what their life is like now, and what this really is all about from a first-hand account. Now, today we have that from David Mahoney, who has agreed to come in this morning and share his experience with COVID-19, and we're so glad he is here this morning. David, thank you so much for coming in.
Thank you, Scott. Morning.
David, let's just start from the beginning. How did this all start? Well, first, normally we wouldn't do this with a guest, but in a medical situation, before this all started, how old were you, and what was your health like?
I was 46, and in pretty good health. I mean, I generally eat healthy. I generally run, 5 to 8 miles a day. No underlying conditions, no high blood pressure, I'm an average weight, 160 pounds. And so as far as anything else, I was in pretty excellent condition.
So obviously not a senior citizen, not somebody with an underlying health condition.
Correct.
Okay. So how did this all start? When did the symptoms arise?
The symptoms arised at the end of March, and it started with, a few little chills and so forth. The chills lasted roughly 2 or 3 days, and that was kind of really the only symptom I had for the first couple of days. And then after that, the chills went away, and it ended up with a headache. And it was the most extreme headache I've ever had in my life, and it to the point it was difficult to even move. I mean, it was just moving would take a toll on me. And then gradually, as the days would go by, other symptoms started to set in. The brain fog, just a weird, unusual feeling of almost confusion and dizziness and fogginess. My vision began to get foggy. I think it was probably about a week into it, and I noticed that I could no longer smell, I couldn't taste, and it was strange because I could taste like sugar and salt, but I couldn't differentiate what I was actually tasting. I mean, if I was eating an orange or a chocolate chip cookie, I couldn't tell which was which. I just knew that there was sugar in it. But as far as being able to distinguish what I was eating, it was just a strange thing.
Now, these don't sound like flu symptoms.
Correct.
They just sound very peculiar. What did you think was happening?
Well, I actually knew. I was at Pickaway, and obviously Pickaway had one of the biggest outbreaks in the state of Ohio. 2,000 inmates, roughly. The last number I saw was roughly 1,500 that they said had tested positive. So inmates were actually getting sick at the very beginning of March, and I started seeing the people around me were all of a sudden starting to come down with the same symptoms. And of course, we're watching the news, so we're hearing a lot about this. And it was pretty clear what we'd had. There was staff members that were starting not to come in, and it started to get pretty scary. I mean, it happened pretty quick.
Now, a lot of people have a lot of because I think this is interesting. A lot of people have some conceptions of what prison life is like. Where you were, is it a friendly atmosphere? Is it a safe atmosphere? What's it like there?
It's, for the most part, generally, the majority of the people there are pretty good people. I mean, people make bad choices, and we pay our, pay our repercussions for it. But it was a safe environment. A lot of people there for, drug offenses, probation violations, which was the reason I was there. And just a lot of normal people. You have a few that are kind of offbeat, I guess, but for the most part, it's pretty normal atmosphere.
Do you ever feel in danger?
I never did, no.
So that being said, I guess where I'm driving with this is, so people, would you consider these your friends at that point?
Absolutely.
And as they're getting sick, what are you thinking?
I was pretty concerned. I mean, a few of my closer friends got sick before me, and they were bedridden for days, and couldn't move, and a few of them had temperatures. A few of them went to medical and were gone for a couple of days. So it was a little scary. As the days went on and I started, getting the chills and some of these symptoms started to set in, I wasn't sure what was going to happen. I mean, at this point, it was so fresh, and, you're hearing about the things going on in New York. I mean, the tragedy they were having at that time, and it was kind of scary.
So as this is going on, how did the staff at the prison react?
For the most part, I would say the correctional officers took a lot of precautions. I think they did a good job. I think as far as the higher-up administration, I don't think did a very good job. I realize this, it came on quick, and a lot of the country and the world was kind of ill-prepared. But I think Pickaway didn't take the necessary precautions ahead of time. I think there was a lot of negligence before and during the time that I was there, and this went on. The administration, the warden, who ultimately was relieved of her job due to her negligence, and the director of the ODRC, she'd actually, during Governor DeWine's, one of his press conferences, she spoke, and a lot of the information she put out there about their preparation and so forth was not very accurate. Mm-hmm. I mean, I can attest to it firsthand that, there was never any sanitizer provided until it was too late. I mean, they started, in May, they started finally bringing sanitizer in. We're in dorms that, should hold 30 people, and there were, 60 people crammed into a dorm. You're 3 feet away. There just was a lack of preparation for it. And they didn't take it serious. When guys were going, in the beginning of March, guys were going to medical complaining of these symptoms. And, a lot of people didn't have a fever. I never had a fever. I never had a cough, never had either one of those two symptoms. But guys would go to medical complaining of these symptoms, and medical would pretty much say you're fine, and basically send them back to the dorm. So it just shows the lack of, I guess, concern of what the reality was of what was really going on.
Did anybody in that particular prison while you were there die from this?
Absolutely. There was, the last number I heard, I think there were, I think there were 40 at Pickaway. There were a few staff members. There was a nurse that unfortunately died. There might have been two staff members. I'm not really sure, but it was frightening because when they had the first test, which was April 4th, or April 2nd, I believe, was when they finally first tested somebody, and they were positive. Of course, they locked the entire institution down, which they should. I mean, they had did right doing that. And, you know, we were locked down for a week or two, and they would bring us bag lunches for, you know, peanut butter and jelly and chips. I mean, we lived on for a couple months in there. And once they brought in more nursing staff and so forth, and the National Guard nurses came in, you could look out the window on the yard and see nurses in the long gowns and the protective gear with wheelchairs, and see them running back and forth all day long in the yard with people in wheelchairs. I mean, every few minutes you would see, you know, five or six different nurses pushing people around the medical and coming in our dorm and, you know, getting people. So it was frightening.
Do you think the opinion was, in general, of why this happened so late in prison, that people are in prison, we don't have to take care of them?
I think that has a lot to do with it. I think, you know, I think so many people, you know, look at people incarcerated as, you know, that their first perception is Charles Manson. We're all like Charles Manson. It's not nearly the case. There's a lot more good people that are incarcerated than there are evil people. Granted, there are some evil people, but the numbers are a lot less. So I think that did play a big part in it.
When did you first know that you had COVID-19 for sure?
April 4th, and I remember because we happened to get tested the same day, and I'd already had a few symptoms for a few days, and April 4th, of course, we're locked in our dorm, and just out of the blue, I couldn't breathe. I just absolutely, like somebody was standing on my chest. I was panicking. I started, which didn't help the issue. You know, you can't breathe. You begin to panic a little bit. So I went into the bathroom and started splashing cold water on my face. I didn't do the trick. I tried to open up. I opened up the windows in the dorm. They were already open. Of course, they have bars in them. But I was trying to, you know, stick my head out for some fresh air, and you know, just nothing was doing any good. I just could absolutely not breathe. So I was pretty scared.
Sounds awful.
Yeah.
So what happened when, as you not being able to breathe, what did they do?
They didn't really do anything because there was quite a few people that were starting to have the same thing. I just at this point they were just overwhelmed because there were so many people that were starting to get more and more severe symptoms, not being able to breathe, and they were just overwhelmed, so that we just basically stayed locked up.
Mm. How did the progression go? You've taken the test at this point.
Right.
You know what you have. So how are they treating it?
Well, it's strange. The first test I took was April 4th. And the entire institution, 2,000 inmates, took the test, and the people that came back positive, they designated dorms, half the dorms in the institution for positive tests, and the other half for the negative test. So the next day, the test results come back, and they start doing a mass moving of people, which was complete chaos. They start doing a mass moving of basically 2,000 inmates, shuffling them around. And I get moved to a positive dorm. And the next day, I'm informed by a correctional officer that myself and 65 other guys, they had made a mistake, that we weren't actually positive, we were negative. So after we're moved into a positive dorm, they move us back to the negative dorms after, you know, we've been exposed and so forth. And they end up testing the negatives again. I believe it was roughly about a week later, and I tested positive that time. And the symptoms just continued to progress. You know, different symptoms would start to set in. My first thought was, you know, it was scary because I couldn't breathe, and going through this terrifying brain fog. It was just It's such an unusual thing to explain. But, you know, I tried to keep in my mind that, you know, because I've heard so much that, you know, in the beginning stages, you know, you'll be sick for 2 weeks and, you know, the symptoms will dissipate and you'll begin to feel better. And 2 weeks passed, 3 weeks passed, you know, a month passed, and I'm not getting any better. And I finally was at the point I was so sick and so, having so much trouble breathing, and the brain fog was such an uncomfortable, just debilitating feeling that, you know, I went to medical, and they said, "Oh, you're having a panic attack," is what I was told, and was given the ibuprofen and sent back to the dorm. I was released. I was released May 27th. So the state had decided to people that were within 2 weeks of going home, they were going to quarantine them. So I happened to fall into the group of the first people that was going to happen to. So what they decided to do was take, there was roughly about 28 of us that were leaving within a week or two, and they emptied out the isolation, the hole, and they put us basically in the hole. So I spent the last 7 days not being able to breathe, you know, pretty fearful what's going on, in a cell with no windows. For 4 days, it was 4 days before I was able to finally get out of the cell and try to make some communication with my family. There was really no interaction with staff. Just another way that I think it was mishandled. I mean, people are, last thing you want to do is put somebody that can't breathe and cram them in a cell with no windows. But I was released on May 27th, and I tested May 20th. They tested before you went home. I tested on May 20th. The test came back negative. So, you know, it's been a month and a half or so. So I'm pretty relieved about that, because I know I'm going home to family. And I get home, and just none of these symptoms are disappearing. You know, I'm having these, you know, just the brain fog and the severe heart palpitations and not being able to breathe, and, you know, other symptoms are starting to set in. So finally, on June 10th, my sister takes me to the emergency room, and they do some general testing and so forth, and everything came back fine. Well, they take a COVID test, and it comes back positive. I'm still, you know, I'm still positive for COVID, as so the test says, which, you know, terrified me, because now I've been around family and so forth, and, you know, that was, I never expected to hear that. But, you know, after doing some research, you know, I was able to find out a little bit that, you know, sometimes after a couple months of a virus, you know, sometimes dead residual cells will kind of, you know, hide in nasal passages and so forth. So I was a little bit hopeful that was the case, that these were just dead cells that the COVID test picked up on. And none of my family fortunately got sick from me being around them. But, you know, the symptoms just continued to increase. And I had set up a doctor's appointment a couple of days before I went to the emergency room, and because I was having all these issues, I was pretty scared. And once I had the positive test, the doctors wouldn't see me. I had to quarantine for 2 weeks before they would see me. So when I was finally able to get in, I saw the doctor, and he was pretty blunt. He was like, "Look, you're the first person that we've even seen that's had COVID." He said, "I'm not even really sure exactly what to do." So he referred me to a pulmonary specialist, which was another 2 months down the road. I'm over 5 months into this, and I've just now am finally starting to see doctors and getting some tests and so forth. They, you know, they'd mentioned, you know, there's, it's now been at one time the symptoms were, you know, 5, 6, 7, 8 symptoms, and now it's been documented that a lot of long haulers, people that's, you know, been suffering for a couple months, there's roughly 100 symptoms that have now been documented. And I've written down, for my purposes for my doctor, I've written down 42 of them that I've dealt with, and those aren't a lot of random ones. Those are sometimes for months, all those basically in the same day, dealing with all those.
Now, when you're in the thick of this in the beginning, are they giving you any type of medication?
They're not. First of all, I've been afraid to take anything because I've never had any type of allergies or been susceptible to foods, medications, insect bites, anything. I've never had any type of reactions to anything. And because of the disruption it's caused in my body, certain foods just causes complete chaos in my body. Something as simple as a aspirin or Tylenol has created a lot of problems. I had had a toothache, and when I had a tooth pulled, and the doctor had given me some antibiotics, and that just wreaked havoc on my body. Mm-hmm. So there's, as of right now, they're not giving me anything. I don't think they're exactly sure what to give me. I live on basically Pedialyte, because it's a lot of electrolytes, and that tends to help a little bit. Regenerate my body a little bit. It kind of helps clear the brain fog at times, and sometimes that doesn't even help.
Mm. So as this is going on, what are you thinking in your own mind is going on?
Well, a couple months ago, I was just baffled why, obviously I'm thinking, okay, I'm having heart problems. This has caused some heart problems, some serious organ problems, brain problems. I'm not exactly sure because at that time, the term long hauler hadn't even been put out there. I mean, there wasn't a lot of discussion about people that had been suffering. There was all the talk about, either people were dying or you got the little flu for 2 weeks and you'd get better. So those beginning stages, I couldn't figure. I thought it was just me, and I started reading articles and ended up getting into a long hauler group. It's called Slack. It's a weird name, but there's over 100,000 people in this group. It's its own social network of people that's been dealing with symptoms for 3, 4, 5, 6 months now. So once I was starting to see all these other people and reading some of their testimonies and people giving examples of what they've been doing, and some of the people that had been seeing doctors and some of the assistance or lack of assistance that they'd been getting was kind of reassuring because it allowed me to realize that it's not just me. There's a lot of people that's actually going through this.
So this has been going on with you now for 5 months.
5 months.
5 months. So what are some of these symptoms that continue with you right now, 5 months later?
The difficulty breathing, I have to almost work up a yawn to get a full breath. Sometimes it's not as intense, but it's always present where I have to take a deep breath in. Sitting down, this is actually, for me, sitting down for a long period of time is difficult because it makes it that much more difficult to breathe. The brain fog, which is... I've tried to explain it to family and other people. It's the most uncomfortable, mysterious thing I've ever dealt with. I mean, it's hard to even explain what it is. It sometimes gets so intense. It's like if I were injected with poison and it's running through my brain. That's how intense it gets, and that's kind of what bothers me the most. For one, it makes it difficult to function. It makes it difficult to think straight. The tinnitus in my ears, the bell ringing, or sometimes lack of bells ringing. The fatigue has never went away. Stomach, tremendous stomach problems. Nausea is pretty much there every day. Bloating. It's difficult when I try to lay down at night and sleep because I've got it's almost like being on a boat. It's like a rocking boat, and sometimes I have to, even though it's dark, I keep it dark. I still have to kind of cover my eyes, just kind of make it subside a little bit. It's kind of dizzying, I guess. A lot of memory problems, confusion. The heart palpitations, which are pretty scary. Those come and go. The inflammation, the inflammation is always present, you know, through my upper torso or my torso. And, you know, then when I eat, all the food, having reactions to the food, just increases the inflammation, which increases the struggle breathing, which increases the brain fog. So a lot of things kind of have a domino effect. You know, I'm scared half the, I got to take precautions on how I eat. Certain things just cause a lot of problems. Being in heat, I can't be in heat for a long extended period of time. And I'm generally a person that loves the heat. I mean, the hotter it is, the more I like it. I 100 degrees, and I'm generally would be one to be out jogging and so forth. And it just has a terrible effect on my body. A lot of dizziness, some vertigo. I've had continuous pain under my right shoulder blade, my neck pain, neck stiffness that's never went away, complete congestion in my nose and sinuses in my head. For the most part, I've had a headache for generally about 5 months straight now. There's been, over the course of the last few weeks, there's been a few days where it's went away, but I've pretty much had a headache for about 5 months. And those are, I mean, there's some of them that are, there's just a lot of strange things. The taste and smell thing, I've never completely gotten my taste and smell back. It's, some of it has come back, but certain things have just a strange smell to them. Like I can't eat hamburger because it's got like a rotten sulfur smell and a rotten sulfur taste to me. Grape Kool-Aid tastes like ammonia. It's just completely screwed up my taste sensors and so forth.
And what are doctors saying this is all from? Is it from the COVID? Is that what they think?
A lot of it is the effects of the COVID. And a lot of it goes back to also sometimes, as I mentioned earlier, a virus can, the dead cells can kind of rest or hide in certain spots. And even though they're no longer harmful or contagious, sometimes the immune system can recognize the virus cells. So your immune system will tend to react to eliminate it. And when it's not actually eliminating anything, all it's doing is it's beginning to cause your immune system no longer becomes your friend. It starts attacking your body and your organs and, you know, causing inflammation and so forth. So it becomes, it's pretty, kind of pretty vicious cycle.
What is the prognosis right now?
I've been to the doctor. I've had one test. I did some with the pulmonary specialist. The lung testing were fine, so I'm glad, except for he did mention lung fatigue. So, you know, I'm relieved. That's one thing that's kind of, I don't have to worry about anymore. The lungs tend to be fine. There was nothing, you know, looks to appear to be long-term. Most of my blood work has come back normal, just the general blood work. They did recognize some inflammation in some of my blood work, which is, he was concerned about. I have some testing tomorrow. Echocardiogram, some other blood work, and some other testing to check for my diaphragm, and I think we're just kind of going from there. I think we're kind of going down the line and trying to eliminate, you know, the things that look like they're fine, and trying to, you know, pinpoint the areas that are causing the most problems. And a lot of it, I think because of the sensitivity to foods and medication, obviously it's disrupted my gastrointestinal system, where, you know, that's, I think a lot of that comes with, you know, the inflammation and the brain fog and some of that. So hopefully all the heart stuff will come back normal, and, you know, we can attack the things that are really causing the problems.
We hear this all the time from people. What do you say to people who say it's the flu, it's a hoax?
Boy, and you do hear that a lot. You know, I can attest that I've had the flu. I think we've all had the flu at least once, probably several times in our life. And this was and has been nothing like the flu whatsoever. This has been the most uncomfortable, scariest, miserable experience I've ever went through. Even, even the 2 weeks, the initial 2 weeks when, you know, I had just the beginning, you know, the normal COVID symptoms we heard about. I mean, it was terrible. It was, I mean, I would not wish this upon anybody to ever have to go through this. And that's why I encourage people to, you know, take all the precautions. And I know my family, I'm on them all the time. Anytime we go in anywhere, you know, I remind them about the mask, and they're good about it. But, you know, I pull the sanitizer out, you know, as soon as we come out, the sanitizer is immediately out and so forth. But I encourage people to do that because it's a scary situation. I mean, people, it can affect a lot of people differently, and people like myself that are generally healthy can have some very, very bad effects from it.
Besides the symptoms, just the general feeling, because people liken it to the flu. That's what they liken this disease to. When you were in the thick of it in the beginning, what do you liken it to?
The very beginning, I would say the first 2 or 3 days, maybe some comparison to the flu. I had the chills and a little bit of nausea. But that was about it. After those first couple of days, when the intense brain fog went in, which I've never experienced anything like this brain fog in my life, and the not being able to breathe, those are a couple symptoms. Those two scary symptoms alone don't compare to any type of flu that I've ever dealt with. It to me, there was no comparison. I mean, it was difficult to move. It was, you know, confusing. The heart palpitations, I've never experienced any severe heart palpitations with any type of flu. The majority of the symptoms I've never experienced with any flu.
Did you ever say, why me?
No, I didn't really ever say that, but there were a lot of moments where, you know, when I was that sick and I was having such a struggle breathing and so forth, I was really convinced this was the end. I told myself, wow, this is, I never dreamed this would be how I would, you know, how I would go with from the COVID. I mean, it was that severe. And it's still, you know, I've still had those moments in the course of the last couple months where there's no rhyme or reason why some of the symptoms will intensify certain days and certain days they'll subside. But, you know, I've recently even had those where the heart palpitations are so severe that, you know, that it's just, I guess it's just normal human instinct for that to kick in, to think, wow, this is it. When you feel like you're dying, I mean, that's kind of the thought.
When you feel like you're dying, what runs through your brain?
I was concerned about my family. You know, I didn't want to, you know, I hated, because I know how much pain and emotion that would cause on them if that happened. But a lot of fear and a lot of worry that, you know, that you know, this isn't how I want to go. You know, I didn't want to go this way. I want to try to go like, you know, a normal person would. I didn't want to perish with a virus like this. And it was surprising because being healthy, you know, when I first got it, you know, I'm good immune system, you know, healthy. I had the thought, well, you know, I'll get over this pretty quick. And boy, was I wrong.
Is there, because this is a viral illness, you have to come in contact with somebody to get it. And it can put you in the frame of mind to where you think you're going to die. Are you ever angry? You say, why did this happen to me? Why am I put in this position? Could I have avoided this?
I was angry. I wasn't necessarily angry in those regards. I was angry more with the institution, Pickaway Institution at the time, and the director of Ohio Department of Rehabilitation and Corrections. I was more angry at them because I thought that they could have been a lot more prepared. And even during the course of it, the handling, I thought they could have handled it a lot more appropriately, with a lot more, a lot more concern. And I have a little bit of, probably still a little bit of anger towards them, how they handled it.
When we look to the future, what do you see the future as?
It's been hard to look for the future. You know, somebody, one of the ladies that's in the COVID group that I'm in, she had mentioned she's been suffering for about 5 or 6 months, and she had an interesting little statement the other day. I was reading, you know, some of the things that she's recently going through. She's finally, things have gotten a little bit better for her, and she had mentioned it was the first day that she's been bored. And for most people, you know, being bored isn't a good thing. And, you know, she explained it perfectly, because I can definitely attest to how it's been. She, you know, this has consumed every second of every day for the last 5 months. There's no physical or mental way to get away from it. I mean, it just engulfs every bit of your day. And by her being bored, it allowed her a little bit of relief through that day for the first time in months, where her mind and her body wasn't absolutely consumed by it. So, you know, I don't remember what it feels like to be normal. It's been 5 months of not feeling any type of normalcy in my body, my mind, any of that. So my future, I look forward to, you know, feeling healthy again and waking up, and, you know, I go to bed at night, and, you know, with the hopes of waking up and finally, you know, things have gotten back to normal. When I wake up in the morning, it's pretty disheartening when, you know, as soon as I open my eyes, you know, it's evident that everything is still there.
How many people are a part of these support groups who have long-term effects?
At one time, there weren't any. I think there was a small group. And the groups are starting to get larger. As I mentioned, the group I'm in, there's over 100,000 people, and that's been a godsend for me. For one, like I mentioned earlier, it's allowed me to realize there's a lot of people experiencing what I've been experiencing. But you know, there's different categories of different things on there. You know, there's so people can get on like a gastrointestinal link on there, and people will post questions, and people can reply to their questions. People will put articles from doctors. I've seen there's been doctors that's done webinars on there, so it's helped me to really be educated about some of the things. I've had to pretty much, except for, you know, support from family and so forth, for quite a while of this, I've had to deal with this on my own, and kind of a lot of trial and error on how to deal with this. But the support is getting bigger. I think there's still a lot of people that aren't educated to the fact that there's hundreds and hundreds of thousands of people that are long haulers. That it, you know, the media or the public speaks so much about the fatalities or the, you know, the 2 weeks and you're done with it, and that's not the case. I think they've even discovered a lot of people that are asymptomatic. They've been doing a lot of testing on those people and finding out that there's even some lung and heart and damage to their body, and they were asymptomatic. So,
do you think one day in your mind that this will all be gone and you'll be back to normal?
As of late, I have been. I'm starting to feel more encouraged. You know, I'm finally seeing some doctors. You know, I'm once again reading a lot of things that people are experiencing and seeing what's helped them, what's not. Some of their success stories that they've documented. So I do feel like that it will come soon. You know, I'm doing my part. My body and so forth only allows me to do so much, as far as I would love to be able to do some of the normal things. I'm just not capable of doing them right now, but you know, I'm optimistic that I will.
Why do you think we don't hear about 100,000 people who have symptoms that go way beyond the two-week period?
A lot of people don't want to hear that. I think a lot of it plays into the media. You know, they kind of want to just kind of make a mockery of really the extent of what this virus can do. And a lot of people just have a different mindset about it. Some people, you know, you have the conspiracy theorists out there, and you have people that just don't look at it seriously. I don't think, people mention the fatalities, you know, I guess how there hasn't been as many fatalities as once was predicted, and people almost kind of, you know, make a mockery of that. And I think people should be, you know, happy that it hasn't turned out like it was once earlier predicted, that, you know, fortunately the fatalities have been less than, you know, what the doctors and the experts had originally said. But people's opinion towards that is completely opposite of how I think they should be looking at it.
Is this a matter, should we look at this as a matter of life and death?
Yeah, absolutely.
Because I don't know if people... Do you think people do? Do you think that's how people see it at this point, 6 months in?
I don't. I don't think... I think maybe in the very beginning stages, I think, when the country or pretty much the world went on quarantine, I think a lot of people did in the very few stages. But I think the lack of fatalities has made people too comfortable, and a lot of people just taking their guard up.
Well, in this at this point, what is your biggest fear, where you are right now?
For one, one of my biggest fears is, I don't want my family to have to deal with this. I don't want anybody to deal with this, but I definitely don't want my family dealing with it. And I'm fearful of, one time the thought was, if you had antibodies, that you would be good and you wouldn't be able to contract it again. Now that's being discovered that's not necessarily the case. I don't want to experience this again. I don't know. I mean, something as simple as a cold right now could wreak just complete chaos on my body. I don't want to have to deal with this again.
What advice would you give to somebody who may contract it or right now is dealing with it?
My advice would be to continue to just don't isolate yourself as far as, obviously you would maybe want to quarantine yourself, but don't isolate yourself as far, find a support group to talk to of other people that are going through it. There's quite a few of them out there now that are starting to evolve. For one, because you need the mental and emotional support going through it. Pay attention to what your body is saying. Like I said, when I was in the early stages eating, I thought eating healthy and trying to run and do things that would, like a normal cold or a flu, you think, I'll sweat it out, and that's not the case. The more exertion you do, it actually has the opposite effect, the more chaos it causes. So just be, take it easy and try to eat healthy and do some research and, rest is very important.
What's been your biggest help during this?
With family support, for one. They've had to, for the last few months, they've had to, because as I mentioned earlier, every second of my day for the most part, even though it's gradually gotten a little bit better, is consumed by dealing with this. I mean, there's no way around it whatsoever. So they've had to hear about and see me, the symptoms and the different symptoms and the strange symptoms. But my family's been extremely supportive, which has been, it's been a true help through this. And the support system I found on the online. That was, like I had mentioned, that was a godsend to find that, because that really, it really helped me emotionally to kind of continue to start feeling a little more positive and a little more optimistic. And it's gave me some tools that which have helped me, you know, certain things, some of the information that were provided in some of the little webinars that I watched has been just true helpful information.
Do you think sending people home to work and closing down alcohol sales at 10 and adjusting hours at stores and mask mandates, is that the right thing to do?
No, I don't necessarily think that solves a whole lot of problems. I always felt, and I understand, I mean, we needed the economy up and running. We, you know, people need, kids need to be going to school and so forth. I get that completely. But I thought they were, the country was too quick to open things up back up. I mean, had we waited maybe two more months, yeah, it would have caused a lot more distress on the economy. But, you know, what's 2 months compared to, you know, years? I mean, if we could have even waited longer, you know, we could have combated this even more and maybe had it even more under control than what it is now. Now, you know, now that everything's opening back up, you know, it's we could be right back to square one, you know, when this is, you know, kids going back to school and, you know, people cramming into bars and so forth.
It's an interesting story, David, and I can't thank you enough for coming in and sharing it this morning. A firsthand account of this pandemic we're going in is very important. Is there any word you have for the audience as we get ready to part this morning?
No, I just once again ask everybody to, you know, take all the precautions, you know, continue to wear your mask. And nobody likes wearing them. I don't like wearing them. I can't breathe with it on, but I still wear it. You know, this is hopefully short term. I mean, if we do the necessary things now, wearing the mask and making sure to sanitize, you know, it'll hopefully, you know, slow this down so much that it's not as problemsome as it's been. So I just ask people to just, you know, be cautious and be courteous to the next people. I mean, if people wearing their masks, you know, that's the right thing to do. No need to make, you know, rude comments towards them or things of that nature.
Mm. David Mahoney, inflicted with COVID-19 back in April when this all started, and suffering with side effects today. We hope everything turns out great, David. Keep us updated on the progress, and thank you for coming in this morning.
Thank you, Scott. I appreciate you having me here.
Thank you. We'll be back in about 10 minutes here on WWGH Radio.
And they were going to say Trump and plump, and I didn't want that for Christmas. You know what I mean?
What about 100,000 protesters in Cleveland this week? Does that give you pause?
I think that's fantastic. I mean, nobody has more protesters than me. And wait till the riots. You're going to see fantastic riots in Cleveland. These are going to be the best riots you've ever seen. I inspire amazing riots, and these are going to be top-notch riots.
Well, I tell you what, Donald, I know it's such a busy time for you. I can't thank you enough. I know you dislike the media, but I always thank you for stopping by.
Well, you know, Scott, you've always been very, very nice to me. You don't hit me with any of those hardball questions, which I think is great. I really appreciate that.
WWGH Radio, your place for politics. Streaming live on the internet at www.wwgh1071.com. Catch us on any mobile device by downloading TuneIn app and WWGH. Programming on WWGH Radio 107.1 FM is supported by CRT Mechanicals. Address 2842 Marion Waldo Road. Telephone number.